This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast by OrangeBloods.com. All of the Orange Bloods gang is here. Myself, Jason, Anwar, Dustin, Alex. I think I've done all of the roll call. It's post-spring game, but before we jump into that, I do want to give that special shout-out to our sponsor of the podcast, the guys over at Ticket City, 1-800-SOLD-OUT. I always implore you to send at Ticket City direct messages on orangebloods.com. We have a special Orange Bloods contact that will take care of you. We'll make sure that you get your Orange Bloods discount. It's all there. Let your subscription work for you so that by the end of the year, you basically have the subscription pay for itself in savings elsewhere. Our guys over at Ticket City have been sponsors really for almost the last 20 years. So we do love them. So support those who support us and a bunch of great people over at Ticket City. You know, all those guys are Austin based. Seems like most of them are Longhorns. So again, hook them up. All right, fellas, spring game was Saturday night and the weather held off and well, the rain held off. The wind didn't hold off. It was actually, you could make a case that the MVP of the game was the wind. Let's just start here, kind of a big picture question, and we'll go around the room. You guys probably know what I'm going to ask. I tend to ask this type of question all the time when we're 4 or 5 days removed from an event. But Anwar, 5 days later, the thing about the spring game that on a Thursday still, you know, as we record this podcast, still jumps out in your mind as maybe the biggest impactful thing you'll take from it.
The biggest thing for me would just be that the defense finally showed up in a scrimmage game. This was a defense that prior to that spring game, we were hearing reports that they were getting their asses whipped during scrimmages. So to see that they actually had a good performance, I know that the win had played an effect as far as the offense goes. I don't think it really plays an effect as far as dropped passes go, because we saw a lot of those. But, you know, it may affect a couple other things or the ability to throw downfield. But being able to see that, being able to see, you know, one of the things Alex has touched on is to see the DBs. And see what those guys were kind of able to do and be able to kind of put out those good hits. You know, I was definitely impressed with the secondary as far as what I saw back there. So from a general, just overall thing, without getting into too many specifics, I was just overall was impressed with what I saw as far as the defensive performance.
What about you, Jason?
Not a lot, if I'm being completely honest.
That's fair.
The wind, the weather. You know, my day was different, certainly than Anwar's. And Dustin, I'm curious, because Dustin and I sat together and I left. I'm curious to hear how long Dustin stayed. So my plan for the spring games is always, you know, I get down there a little early, hang out at the tailgate for a little bit, but then I go down there and kind of sit in the stands and I'm just snapping as many pictures as I can of recruits. So my focus is really recruiting focused. But my plan all along was to leave at halftime, get home. That way I could work the phones, you know, monitor Twitter, you know, touch base with guys as they're leaving. Well, that game, it was so damn cold and frankly so uneventful. I left, I think, after the first quarter. So I drove home, listened to the rest on the radio. And then I haven't even gone back and rewatched it. That's how uneventful I found that game. But, you know, from what I saw, like Anwar said, man, the defense played well, lots of drops. My man Jared Wiley, who I've kind of privately been a fan of for a long time, had two big drops. I thought the secondary played well, but the wind just wreaked so much havoc on that passing game. It's kind of a, you know, I just don't take a whole lot away from that game. From a recruiting perspective, it's pretty incredible. All the guys I've talked to just raved about the overall experience. So my biggest takeaway is really that the staff once again just knocked it out of the park from a recruiting perspective, especially in talking to some of these guys who went to A&M's spring game on Friday and then Texas's spring game on Saturday. The way they described those two games or those two environments was just night and day. Texas blew them away. A&M was kind of ho-hum. So from a recruiting perspective, you know, a lot of talent on campus. Texas did a really good job with the environment, with the atmosphere, with Matthew McConaughey, the concerts going around. Fans deserve a big chunk of that credit. The recruits I talked to mentioned the fans and, you know, how loud they were. So I thought it was a good event from a recruiting perspective. As far as the game, you know, I'm more focused on what we've heard for the month of practice leading up to that one spring game, which was pretty uneventful.
Dustin, Jason wants to hear from you.
Yeah, I did stay for almost the entire time. And as I was walking back to the car, I at one point almost got knocked over by the wind. So that's how bad it was. But
yeah, I was having to literally sort of lean into the wind.
Yeah, I knew when I was watching warmups, I was like, oh, God, the way people react to the passing game is going to be interesting, because these guys literally couldn't throw the ball 10 yards down the field without it, you know, the wind making it dive down to the turf or something like that. I think the things that stuck out with me is Jeffrey McCulloch. We've been waiting for him to have a breakout season for a long time, and this is his last chance. He's got no more chances after this, heading into his last year at Texas. And just to see him consistently make plays at a linebacker position where we know Texas is thin and they really need guys to step up, I think that was a big positive for Texas. And then also, too, just all of the young players, but more importantly, all the young players we heard about through spring football, you know, Malcolm Epps, Jordan Whittington, DeMarvion Overshown, Jalen Green, Dele Odeyewe. Like, a lot of the names that we heard throughout spring practice that were kind of catching people's attention and doing some good things, those guys were present during the spring game. Now, Whittington didn't quite have the performance I thought he would have, but it's pretty clear that Texas wants to involve him in the offense a lot next season. And of course, they said that they were vanilla. I don't think they really showed anything that was too new or any of these wrinkles or anything like that. But a lot of the young players that we'd heard about throughout the spring did show up during that game, whether it was being a very, very active guy in the offense, whether it was making some plays on defense, whether it was being out there with the first group, whatever. A lot of young guys made their presence felt, which I think is a good sign for the health of the Texas program.
Alex, before I give my thoughts, certainly want to hear from you. Probably more that, even though I've gone back and watched the spring game, I haven't gone back and watched the spring game quite like you've gone back and watch the spring game. So the floor is yours. What's rolling around in that head of yours?
Well, I don't have much to say yet on the offense because I've just started it. I should have that breakdown up sometime over the weekend at Orange Bloods, but I did get up my breakdown from the defensive side of the football. And I could tell you from just watching the, well, first of all, just the stadium experience. I haven't been down there to the stadium really during a game day sort of atmosphere since the last, really the last spring game. I think I went to one tailgate last year, but I was hanging out up there on the sort of the northeastern side of the stadium. I had never seen Bevo Boulevard. Have you guys walked down that thing and just like seen it
over
on the front side?
Yes. Yeah, I didn't onward.
It's kind of my job, so I kind of have to do it.
Right. So. Well, and you also enter to go to the press box from that
correct,
side.
Of correct. Correct. Yeah. I have to.
But, like, I walked down there, and that thing, like, there's a bunch of activity, a bunch of action, fun stuff for kids, lots of different choices for, like, you can even drink. They sell drinks and, you know, margaritas and little, you know, alcoholic drinks you could buy in those yard cups like you're in, you know, New Orleans or something, and beer.
When you say it's great for kids, are you saying, like, adult kids?
No. I mean, No, well, yeah.
He's like, it's great for kids. They've got margaritas and alcohol and beer.
You can order that stuff while you're waiting for your kid to go jump around in the castle palace or something.
Fair enough.
Face painting, all the, you know, stuff like that for the kids, and also stuff, I guess, stuff for the family. And you know, good time, good energy and atmosphere down there. I think they even bring Bevo kind of up through there whenever he enters. So it's a It's a cool deal. Like, I'd never, you know, just as a complete aside, it's actually a good game day experience, which is something that Texas hasn't really truly had. And since I've been even in college or, you know, covering the program, following it, whatever. As far as on the defensive side of the football, you know, the one thing you could take away just from doing the defense and breaking it completely down is that the second team offensive line is going to be trouble. I mean, I'm not looking forward to my continuation of that group. We thought that we'd gotten some decent depth along the offensive line. And while that is the case, you know, I still think that it's developmental depth based on the way that guys like Jacoby Jones, Daniel Carson, you know, even DeAndre Christmas, who's finally showed some sort of pulse in this game. Peter Mpogi, another guy that's a true freshman, only played 15 snaps, but, well, you know, the second most effective on a pure snap basis. Not to take anything away from Byron Vaughn's. Probably the fourth most effective on a per snap basis. All these guys along the second defensive line or one of the second outside linebacker spots really, really graded out really well. And while I don't want to take anything away from these guys, I also think it probably has something to do with that second team. That's second team offensive line, and I'll have a lot more to say about that one once I get done with grading every snap of all those guys. We got 49 snaps from each of the orange team and the white team, which was kind of interesting. They played the exact same number of snaps, just a few broad takeaways. One, DeMarvion Overshown working out with the backups in the twos. I thought that was pretty interesting considering the fact that, you know, he had been getting a bunch of work with the ones. He was actually overtaken, I guess, toward the end of spring ball by Montrell Estelle, who worked at the second, who worked there as the first safety for the whole entire game. So DeMarvion Overshown, a guy that Texas fans have had a whole lot of hopes for, is maybe stepping up and maybe taking on that dime role next year. He could possibly not be in the lead and have some things that he needs to work on. What definitely was effective, though, during the game, the second most effective player on that second defense behind Jacoby Jones, who I feel like has to be one of the talking points here. Like I said, I can't tell if it's a zero-sum game. I can't tell if that offensive line, that second O-line was just so bad, but, you know, he had a bunch of tackles. He had two quarterback hits, which technically aren't even allowed, but I guess they didn't care against Casey Thompson the way they did against Sam Ehlinger. Two pressures, he had a batted pass and two separate run stuffs, no misses. So Jacoby Jones will be one to watch. I think he'll certainly be in play there with the first group as we get into the fall and the summer. And then on the back end, I think Jalen Green, you know, he was the most productive player on the day, actually tied with Jeffrey McCulloch via my charting for the most two productive players on the day, both with the first defense. Jalen Green he was thrown out 11 times in this game, only allowed four completions. On four of those balls, he either had a pass breakup or a blow up where he just completely blew up the wide receiver to where he couldn't make a catch. And I know that there the wind was a big deal that really hampered that first team passing game. But you can't take it away from Jalen Green that he was around the football when it was delivered. He was blowing up guys. He was making big breakups. He showed me that he needs to be one of the starting corners coming into next fall. Now it's just up to Anthony Cook and Deshaun Jameson to figure out which one of those guys is going to be starting on the other side of him. And then Jeffrey McCulloch, I think, finally was my other big takeaway. Look, Texas fans, they needed Jeffrey McCulloch to show up big in this game because he's the one guy with any semblance of seniority in that linebacking core, and definitely the guy with the most sort of, you know, recruiting pedigree that came in with, you know, all of these, you know, tangible attributes that, you know, we salivated over at the time. It really feels like he's taking the next step. He's getting to the quarterback, three pressures, getting behind the line of scrimmage with a tackle for a loss. He had two pass breakups and also an interception whenever he was guarding these running backs and some of these tight ends getting out into the flats. He can guard the running on those wheel routes. Jeffrey McCulloch can run with you. He can run with you no matter who you are, whether you're the fastest running back on the team, whether you're a wide receiver coming out of like jet action, playing in that rover spot. He's got to be able to run with these guys on these wheel routes as they continue to use those more and more and more, especially out of that jet motion. And Jeffrey McCulloch showed that he could do it and also showed that he can come downhill and make these plays. So only one missed tackle on the day. And I feel like he was a guy that really came out and showed, boy, if, you know, Texas cannot afford an injury to Jeffrey McCulloch because he's by far looking like their best linebacker.
I feel like you guys have said most of the big hitting things. I just wanted to reinforce on the win part. It was like 1:30 on Saturday, and I was driving the toll road, and I had a hard time controlling my car. Like, it had been a long time since I felt like I was being pushed all over the road quite like that by the wind. And I just remember thinking then, oh, the passing game is going to be wretched. It really is. And weirdly, guys, I thought that it's a very understated observation, probably. In the grand scheme of things, it probably doesn't mean a ton. But there were a couple of times when I found myself impressed with balls that Casey Thompson threw.
Yeah.
Because he was on target in what was a really strong wind.
And some of those were egregious drops, catch. The Jordan Pouncey drops, you're just like, what the hell are you doing? The Jared Wiley drops, you know? And then there was the Kirk Johnson. There was the perfectly placed ball to Kirk Johnson there. There would have been a beautiful touchdown. He just couldn't reel it in.
I think there was a play that he threw over the middle, and it wasn't like a monster play, but I'm pretty sure it was actually completed. It's been a few days since I've watched, and it all kind of bleeds together. But if I remember correctly, he threw it from the pocket. He threw it into a stiff breeze. It wasn't an easy throw, and it was on target. And I thought, okay, well, you know, we won't be thinking about that in August, right? We're not going to remember that 8-yard incompletion in the spring. And what was, you know, there was a point. I'm not looking at his final numbers, but with about a minute to go in the second quarter, he was averaging less than 2 yards per attempt in terms of like the first half, which is wretched. So if you look at it from a statistical standpoint, it's real easy to be, I think, dismissive of what Casey Thompson did. But there were a ton of drops. And then there were just a couple of moments where I thought he threw the ball like an actual throwing quarterback first and not a run quarterback first, that made me think, okay, there's, you know, very quietly, I think there's some really positive things from the throw, from an arm standpoint, that you can take from Casey Thompson. And I thought that was a good thing, because I do think they're going to need him, at some point this season, potentially to start a game, unless Sam Ehlinger, by them doing a better Anwar, I'm curious. One of the things I wrote about after the game, but I've been thinking about a lot this week, just in the aftermath, is, look, if Sam Ehlinger plays every game next season and they don't change a thing, like, he's going to take a beating. Like, one of the lasting memories of that Sugar Bowl was they finally were able to get him into the end zone, but the sequence of four plays from the 1 yard line where they try to essentially clinch the game against Georgia, he gets in on the final one, but my goodness, they took a pound of flesh in the process. Like, there were some just hits on the goal line that, all things being equal, you wouldn't want your starting running back to take, let alone your starting quarterback. I'm watching Casey Thompson in the spring game, and he's a completely different type of runner than Sam. But when I think about this team being in obvious running situations, and maybe not obviously against the Oklahomas and the LSUs of the world, but if it's 3rd and 2 and they want to get into that wildcat or obvious run, heavy run formation look, I wonder how smart it will be of them next year to take some of that out of Sam's hands and maybe either put that into Casey Thompson or little Jordan Humphrey's hands. The one thing I think I took from the spring was that, well, Casey Thompson can run. Like, he can definitely do that. And all things being equal, be a nice way to, like, find a wrinkle in the offense to add that component, which is different than what Sam's running ability. Do you get the sense that when we get into the fall, that they're going to want to take some of the rushing load off of Sam? Because otherwise, I don't know that he survives 12, 13, 14 games playing the badass supernova, I'll crash into anything, rock 'em, sock 'em, Sam Ehlinger style of football.
Well, little Jordan Humphreys is in the NFL.
I'm sorry. Not little Jordan. Okay. I meant little Jordan's twin cousin, the one that's currently playing running back right now.
Jordan Whittington?
Yes, that little Jordan Humphrey.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I figured it's just a quick slip. Just wanted to prevent a thread on getting started.
Thank you.
So, You know, Ketch, the one thing about it is, you know, I hear what you're saying, but there is also belief that it helps him, Sam, get more part of the game, more part of the feel when he's actually able to do some of those running things. And it's like it almost like it gets him cooking in some ways. And so it's interesting. It's an interesting thought process where I hear what you're saying, but I'm not quite sure at this moment that they're going to rein him totally back, because I still believe they believe that's a part of the game. Whenever you've talked to Tom Herman about it or talked to Tim Beck about it,
Anwar, I wouldn't say totally back. I would just say, like, in games against the North Texases of the – or the Louisiana Techs of the world, or, you know, Kansas, or – I don't know. I'm just – in games where they should be winning games thoroughly, I just wonder if just a little bit less, like, you know, maybe cut his rushing attempts down by one third from a year ago in games that – but you don't need him to spill blood on the field. But I totally get what you're saying. And it is a damned if they do, damned if they don't type of situation. Because you're exactly right. Like, that's a big part of Sam's game. I just wonder if it's a big part of their game that they wouldn't want to scale back a little bit, because we've seen Sam get knocked out of games. Like, it's two seasons in a row where he's taking big shots and you know, And ultimately paying the price by missing game time because of that style, which is critical for him. So I feel you. Like, I realize that what I'm suggesting doesn't come without taking its own pound of flesh in the process.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that, you know, the season opener, if Texas can go ahead and get to a comfortable lead in the second half, that you got to throw in Casey Thompson, just because to your greater point of the possibilities of one, Sam getting hurt, two, they need guys who have some reps. I mean, Casey Thompson doesn't have any reps on the college level. Roshan is clearly not ready at this moment. But he definitely doesn't have any reps, but, and they want to probably save that for a redshirt. But I think that any opportunity that they have with a lead to get Casey Thompson in totally makes sense. I mean, we definitely know that they're going to try to do some experimentation with putting Keontae Ingram and Jordan Winnington on the field at the same time. So, you know, I can see that being a part of the run game. But I hear what you're saying, to dial it back even just a little bit. I just don't know if that's their mentality, to be quite honest with you.
Fair enough. Is anybody impressed enough with Thompson as – forget about Sam for a second – that Thompson as a runner – bring something just unique to what the offense otherwise has, and in that running component at quarterback, think that he's a guy they have to play, I don't know, a few snaps a game at the very least, simply because of what he gives just from an explosion, speed, quickness, athlete standpoint at that running position.
Well, you guys know me, man. Like, I've always loved Casey Thompson's touch on the foot. I've loved him as a pure thrower of the football. Like, I think that all this running stuff that we saw in this, I mean, that's a big takeaway that I'm sure I'll have when I get done with the offense, is like, we haven't really seen him in a setting where, you know, we get to see a whole bunch of a scrimmage where we get to see what he could do with his legs. That stuff's like, like icing on top for me. So yeah, I think that I don't think that he's necessarily a guy, because, you know, a lot of that skill set, even though they're different sorts of runners, I mean, that skill set is a little bit redundant with what Texas already has in Sam Ellinger, right? You know, he's a good, pretty good thrower of the football and a pretty, you know, pretty good to real damn good runner in a different way. You know, with Casey Thompson, it's more elusiveness via twitch. With Sam Ellinger, it's a lot more elusiveness via just, you know, better than average speed and just a whole lot of power. That guy's a truck, you know, more like he runs more like a Tim Tebow as opposed to Casey Thompson, who runs a little bit more like, not like a Lamar Jackson, but, you know, a little bit smaller dude, a little bit twitchier. So I think that was the question, is Casey Thompson a guy who the Texas staff needs to find ways to get involved in the offensive game plan next year, even if Ellinger's not hurt?
Yeah, like, forget about trying to even save Sam from all of the collisions. In general, does the offense, does it behoove the Texas offense? Do they get better by Thompson getting a half dozen plays a game in some variety of ways because of everything that he does bring to the table potentially?
I understand the question now. So what I think the answer is no. Okay. I think you leave Sam Ellinger in there and you let Casey Thompson continue to develop. And I just think the stuff that we've seen in this spring game just bodes really well for the future. But I think Sam right now is clearly the better option. And the guy, you know, he's going to be a Heisman finalist, and you don't want that guy off the field.
Fair enough. You know, Jason, I think part of this is like my thought process is the fact that not under this staff, but under previous staffs, especially under Mac, like I guess I'm partly thinking about David Ash and thinking about how he wasn't the starting quarterback and but they felt like when he was a young player that he gave them a little something extra as a runner in those kind of run dominant packages. I don't know. Like I said, there's going to be a part of me that watches Sam play all season long and wonders when the moment is going to come.
You cringe every time he hits the turf or takes a shot to the shoulder or something.
Because he doesn't avoid any of them.
He'll deliver the shot more times than not. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting question. I tend to agree with Alex. I think you kind of dance with the one who brought you, and Sam's your guy. I mean, I think you stick with him until you can't stick with him. But Casey Thompson does bring a different dynamic with, like Alex said, kind of his quick twitch style of running. But, you know, I agree with Alex. In talking to, you know, I got to know Casey pretty well when he was a recruit, and I saw him at camps and different events. He doesn't envision himself. I mean, you know, people think, oh, dual threat quarterback. A lot of times that's an athlete playing quarterback. No, Casey Thompson almost envisions himself as a pro style quarterback who can, you know, who can also run. It's just the icing on the cake that he can run. I mean, he would tell you he's a passer first, and he's technical with his passes. He's accurate with his passes. Maybe, you know, doesn't have the biggest arm, but he is a very skilled passer. He was in high school, so he can certainly run. You saw that on Saturday night. But don't be confused for people who aren't overly familiar with him. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not your traditional dual threat guy who struggles throwing the ball. Or maybe you give up some of the passing game because he's such an effective runner. No, he is a very skilled passer with a very good passing skill set. He views himself as a passer first. So, you know, it was nice to get a glimpse of his athleticism on Saturday at the Orange-White game. But I think in different settings, different wind conditions, so on and so forth. And you saw glimpses of it. You guys have talked about it. He is a very effective passer as well. So he can do a little bit of both for you.
Dustin, I want to ask you this question first, but I can't. So you may go last because he's your boy. Jeffrey McCulloch. If we were doing if I asked everybody for their power rankings, their three most, you know, impressive players from the game, the three players that left the biggest impact, I feel like McCulloch probably makes everybody in the stadium's top three. Certainly had the biggest play of the game with the pick near pick six, which Sam couldn't help himself. And like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, Sam couldn't help himself in the spring not to make a tackle on Jeffrey McCulloch. And I have watched that play several times now. And I'm like, Sam, like, I feel you. And it's the thing that makes you Sam, but just let that fucker score. Like, who cares? It's the spring game. That happens against LSU. Sam's going to do that too, but it's just, that's that level of contact that I don't know. I want to, you know, by the end of Colt McCoy's career, I wanted to wrap him up in a box and only break it open in need of like emergency. I don't want to have to do that with Sam. But Jeffrey McCulloch, did anybody watch that over the weekend? And then today, though, still has doubt. I guess the question I'm asking is, does anybody believe that what we saw Saturday doesn't automatically reflect on what we'll see in the fall? Or does everybody think that the guy that was a star on Saturday night, and I love the play that he made on the wheel route where he broke that one up, is there anybody that think that that was a bit of fool's gold and potentially a mirage?
I don't. I think he's taking the next step. I think he finally has.
Jason, Anwar, any hesitation? Because I'm kind of with Alex. Like, the player that I saw on Saturday, coupled with the things that we were already hearing, coupled with, you know, he showed a lot of flashes last year. They just didn't seem to be coming together in spurts together. any hesitation, and like that guy is going to be one of the Big 12's best linebackers next season.
I'm not ready to go that far, but I think he's ready to have his moments. I think I've talked about him before. It seems like you said, in spurts, and when he had chances in small doses, he was effective at times, you know, his first few years. So the talent's there, the playmaking ability, the flashes have been there. We just haven't seen him log a ton of playing time, and he hasn't been maybe consistent enough, but you know, he knows, hey, it's now or never for him. I mean, there's a reason this guy was a highly sought after top national recruit. You know, I don't know. Honestly, I can't say I'm familiar with the Big 12 depth charts at linebacker, but in general, you know, I don't know if I'd say he's going to be an all Big 12 caliber player, but I think he's ready to be a very effective player for Texas. I don't have any concerns saying that.
I one thing about McCulloch is the way Herman described him after the scrimmage when he was asked about him, and he brought up just his consistency and how hard he's playing in practice. And I think that when Herman says that about guys, it's usually a huge endorsement, because we know how obsessed he is with practice habits and improving your worth in practice and all those sorts of things. And it sounded like that's kind of what's kept Jeffrey McCulloch off the field more, is that he just hasn't ever been that standout all the time guy in practice that just brings it every single day. So to hear Herman describe him like that makes me think that something's clicked for McCulloch. And sometimes it's, you know, it's like I see this in basketball with Jericho Sims. And, you know, when Jackson Hayes went out, he immediately became better player because he knew he had to play. And I think with Jeffrey McCulloch, he knows he's got to play. He knows that there's not many options at linebacker. He knows that this is his last season to really figure everything out. And sometimes that can just be the thing that guys need to elevate their play, to get them to be more confident, to get them to be more comfortable. And you could see him on the field, too. He was talking a lot more. And we know that that's something this defense is going to need. Is more that kind of senior leadership, because you are losing a bunch of guys like, you know, Chris Nelson and Anthony Wheeler and Gary Johnson and those types of players, Chris Boyd, Devontae Davis. They're going to need some older guys on the field that know what's going on, that know where to put guys, that know how to talk to their younger teammates and things like that. So just the way Herman just talked about McCulloch after the scrimmage made me think that they are finally seeing what they want to see from him. And he too, I think he knows that this is my shot and I've got to play. My opportunity is here. None of these other guys are in front of me anymore. And I think that's what we saw in the spring game.
Dustin, I'll have you know that if we were playing Around the Horn and I was Tony Reale, I would have given you a lot of points for the Jericho Sims comparison.
Thank you.
I thought that was a really good one. And it was, we haven't talked about it because in general, basketball is a little taboo, but just like 60 seconds. What the hell did get into Jericho Sims at the end of the season? It was like, we all expected him to be really good this year based on the way his season ended a year ago. And then he basically did nothing all year. And then Jackson Hayes gets hurt. And then Jericho Sims looks like a guy that should have been playing all year.
Yeah, it's the strangest thing. At least you didn't write before the season Jericho Sims was going to have a monster. You're like,
no, I did. I was like vice president of the Jericho Sims
fan. Yeah, he had such a great summer. And then it was like once Jackson Hayes started to become really good, Jericho Sims is, you started to hear some things behind the scenes that he's been kind of inconsistent or this and that. And, you know, he went from like the arrow pointing way up to it suddenly going back down and up and back and down and up and down and up and down, kind of like the Texas basketball team. But he did this when he was a freshman too, when Mohamed Bamba had his foot issue late in the season and he had to play to get Texas in the NCAA tournament. And I think he had a game against West Virginia, who has a monster front court. I think he had like a double-double or something like that as a freshman. So we've seen this from him before. Like when he knows his team needs him and that he's going to play a lot, he usually responds in a positive manner. It's like, yeah, at the end of the year, it's like, okay, there's the Jericho Sims we thought we were going to get for the entire season. But yeah, it's just he's such a quiet, different kid. That kind of struggles with confidence. And when he knows that the opportunity is there, that he has to play, that's usually when he's at his best.
Man, like, Shaka needs to threaten him with his life. Like, your family is held hostage. Go play.
Yeah, something
that makes something him, like that. Makes him feel that thing in November that he feels in March. Okay, sorry, guys. A little sidebar basketball thing, but I didn't even realize I had that Jackson Hayes question. I mean, the Jericho Sims question still in my head. But as soon as you said the name, I was like, what the hell happened with him? Let's talk about Jalen Green for a second. I'll ask everybody the same question about Jalen Green that I asked. And we'll start with you, Dustin. Is the Jalen Green that we saw in the spring, is that the authentic version of the Jalen Green we're going to get in the fall?
I think so. I'm all in on Jalen Green. You know, you mentioned a little while ago on the podcast about, you know, ranking some of the performers from the spring game. He would be at the top of my list. I think that he was the most physically impressive looking guy out there on the field. I mean, he just looks like a future NFL player, just the size, the length, the muscle, the way he moves, the quick twitch, the speed, the physicality, all of those things. I'm definitely all in on Jalen Green, and like all corners in the Big 12, especially younger corners, they're going to be some bumps in the road with learning and things like that. And this conference really, really, really tests defensive backs with these offenses and these receivers and these quarterbacks and these coaches. But I'm all in on Jalen Green. I think that is the kind of guy that we're going to see this upcoming season. And like Alex said, I find it really hard to believe they're going to be able to keep that guy off the field. He's simply too talented. And we saw, you know, him fly up to the line of scrimmage and diagnose a play in a little swing route and blow that up. We saw him just, you know, pressing guys. We saw him handle Malcolm Epps a lot, who has a ton of size. We saw him turn and run down the field. I think that is the real Jalen Green. And the guy that, you know, in that state of Texas class coming out of high school, which was so difficult to rank because there are so many good defensive backs. You know, a lot of people thought that Jalen Green might be the best in the state, best player in the state, maybe. So I think that's what we saw in the spring game, and I think that he's in for a huge season next year.
Anyone not buying huge season for Jalen Green?
Nah, I'm all in. I talked to him about him a couple weeks ago in the secondary. I said, you know, I'm usually the guy that says, hey, I need to see it on the field first, but I have such blind faith in those young guys in the secondaries because after seeing them as recruits, they were so good. And Dustin mentioned, I remember talking to some other analysts and, you know, some guys like Anthony Cook. And I remember at a Rivals camp, I said, I think Jalen Green was the top DB in the state in that class. And that was an incredibly deep defensive back class. Like, I mean, the guy, he looks like a million bucks. He backs it up with his athleticism. He's confident. He kind of has a quiet confidence to him when you talk to him. I think that guy is a future high NFL draft pick. I think he's a superstar in the making. I mean, they have so much depth in the secondary. It's going to be interesting to see how those reps get divided. I mean, somebody's going to have to, you know, between him and Jamison and Cook. I mean, you know, when they're in their base package, I mean, somebody's going to have to come off the field sometimes, but I think Jalen Green's in for a big year, and I think his career is about to take off.
Wow. Anybody not buying superstar?
Wow. Jason said that about
the Jaguars. That's just what you said, Omar.
Superstar high NFL draft pick. Is anybody not buying that?
Have you seen him? I mean, it's like.
I'm just asking the question.
Jason's the guy who's always told us to tap the brakes. And I mean, I've said it since I first saw the kid. I'm like, it's not going to be long before he's absolutely starting. You know, it was just funny when spring ball started out and it was, they had Kobe Boyce back there. You know, it's just like, you know, obviously that won't last. Hard to put that kind of praise on a kid this young, but like my question is like, have you seen him? And whenever you really think to yourself, there are a lot of DBs in that Texas secondary right now that, you know, when you look at you look at Caden Stearns, you look at Brandon Jones will be picked probably higher next year than a whole lot of people think. BJ, you know, BJ Foster, based on catching everything that you've done with your recruiting ranking studies and whatever the guy is, like the number one player at his position in the whole country, you know, that guy's going to play in the NFL. And I think he's looked as good or better than advertised thus far. You know, it's like Jalen Green, Anthony Cook, all like there's been a bunch of really good players in that secondary. So you could get a little bit, I guess you could get a little bit, you know, speed blind, or, you know, like you can, you're comparing them to so many other good players. So you might be a little bit biased, but if you just look at Jalen Green and the kind of prospect that he is, he's going to be really, really good for Texas. And yeah, I think eventually, given the nature of the NFL and how important the cornerback position is, he'll be a highly drafted corner. People are talking about taking Chris Boyd in the fourth round, and Chris Boyd wasn't even that good for Texas.
It's what I think is really interesting about where Anwar, usually in a recruiting class, like my general thought is like, if you sign four badass players, you want two of them. If you sign four badass players in every class at a position like defensive back, well, if you hit two out of the four every year, you're going to be made in the shade at really whatever position that we're talking about. I mean, if Texas historically had been recruiting four good offensive linemen in every class and two of them panned out, then they at all times have like eight really good offensive linemen in the program for the most part. And you're just constantly, you know, it's constantly working out wonders for you. That's how Texas initially built a nationally dominant program in the last decade, that, you know, won 10 games or more, like what, 10 years in a row, and essentially played for three national championships, but in two national championship games. This 2018 defensive back class, they're not hitting at a 50-50 rate on appearances. It feels like they're going to hit on all of them. I mean, we know Foster. We know Stearns is good. We know that Cook's going to be a big-time player in this defense. We've now seen Jalen Green. Although we don't quite, I think, know where DeMarvion Overshone's final destination is going to be, he looks like a player. It feels like the guy that we know the least about right now from a player standpoint is DeShawn Jameson. And everybody thinks he's a badass, that it's just a matter of time for him as well. That first recruiting class for Herman, the one that was so H-Town centric, that produced such a great defensive back class, I think the way that it's setting up for the next 2 years, you're going to have all of these guys before they can head to the NFL. You're going to get 2 years of Green, 2 years of Foster, 2 years of Stearns. You're going to get, you know, who knows, maybe 2-3 years more of Cook. And these, like, the secondary looks like it's in phenomenal shape. And when you play in the Big 12, there, you know, you'd want a great pass rush, obviously, but a great secondary makes an average pass rush get better. And I have to just feel like, as confident as Tom Herman is with his coaches in the secondary, with both Nivar and Washington and the jobs that they've done at Houston, coupled with the jobs that they've already done in Austin, to have this kind of talent and they all look locked and ready to go, I think that might be the thing from the spring game that I take away the most, is that, my God, they've got some serious artillery in the secondary. And it may be the thing that makes the biggest improvement from a season ago, is that it's asking a lot for the light switch to come on with all of these young guys, but, you know, it seems to be happening to some degree, and they've got a chance to just be really, really good on the back end, potentially sensational a year from now.
Well, I mean, I would just go to what Alex's point was. You know, when you start thinking about the losses and the guys that they don't have, like you talk about the Chris Boyds, you talk about Devontae. But Chris Boyd, let's just be honest, he was shaky. I mean, there was not enough consistency from Chris Boyd where you just say, my God, that's a lockdown guy. There was times, have you seen games where teams just looked for where number two was and they were just going at him at all times. So, you know, you look at the Jalen Greens and, like, you went down the list of all the guys who – you know, potentially could be in there, where it's going to be Anthony Cook or whoever ends up being, you know, the starting opposite, tons of talent that's there. And really, you touched so much on that, but I just, you know, when I pulled up just that overall 2018 class, you know, her positive things about Avante Woodard, Brennan Eagles, Josh Moore, obviously prior to that game, had been playing well. Malcolm Epps, as everyone knows, had been playing well. Keontae Ingram, Casey Thompson's now the number two guy. Cameron Risen decided to transfer because of the Sam Ellinger thing.
You know, but Reese Moore has been making progress. Rafidi had did a great job. People were very happy with him. I don't know what the hell happened on Saturday. Maybe some of that's wind aided. But Junior is a guy. Angelou is a guy that Alex loves. He's a guy that more than likely, when the training camp is over with, is probably starting on the offensive line. You got Mikey Grandy. You got Byron Hobbs. Is probably the only guy who's maybe been lost in the mix here. But his mom has a tremendous presence on Twitter, so shout out to mom. But Deli is a guy that's going to contribute. You still got Dicker the kicker. Is it Bucheski, if I'm saying it correctly? Herman had talked about starting out camp for the first week or two. He was pretty bad. And then they had the break. I think he may have gotten with Dixon, and then all of a sudden he's fine. Corbin's a guy that's going to be competing to start. Christian Jones. I mean, like, if I could keep going down the entire list, I mean, hell, might as well. I'm almost there. Morrow is a guy that you expect to contribute. Daniel Carlson still on the team. Mike Williams is a guy they're still waiting on. And then Joseph Asai is
Where's Mike Williams been? Is he hurt?
Is he
out there at practice? I haven't seen him at all.
Mike Williams transferred. Yeah.
Okay,
that's so right. And then, yes, he did. You're right. He did transfer. Was he the LSU? Did he went back to LSU?
I think
he went back to Louisiana.
I think he went to LSU, but not on a scholarship, maybe?
Something weird like that. But yeah, I think it was LSU. You're correct.
Went closer to home, yes.
Basically. Yes, and Joseph Asai, who everyone believes is going to be a monster. So, back to your overall point about that 2018 class, like it is going to be a monstrous class where with the next year or two, you're going to see tons of guys heading to the NFL, and you're going to see a lot of guys fighting for playing time. And it's going to be interesting, Catch. I'll say this and shut up. But when we're talking about a secondary that still was without Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones, when those guys come back and healthy, the only criminal part of it is how do you get some of these guys on the field, especially at the safety position, just because you have those incumbents in front of them?
No, it's a great point, Anwar, because when those guys were all recruited, as you know, I guess you could contend that some people saw Overshown as a guy that might eventually be a spin down guy, and Jameson played offense a year ago. But when they were recruited, there was a question of like, how the hell do you get them all on the field at the same time? And won't they conflict with each other? And I just kind of scoffed at that. I was like, because it's like, yeah, because they're all going to pan out, right? Like, as sarcastic as I could possibly think it in my head, like, that's not the way it works. The way this is supposed to work is that half of them work out or the majority of them work out. But yeah, like, I'm sitting around wondering how the hell do they get Overshown and Jameson and some of these guys on the field, because they're really, really good. It's a fantastic problem to have. And again, if you're a Big 12 team, you know, the makings for a really, really, really good defense for Herman are there, and it's coinciding at a time where you've got Sam Ellinger on campus for two more years. So it's interesting because ESPN came out with this thing, and this will be the last thing we talk about before we go into parting shots, because everybody's got a little bit of some time commitments this morning as we record. So the ESPN did you guys see that? They did, I don't know, the computer simulator or whatever, and it had Oklahoma.
Mentioned, right?
Oklahoma had less than a 1% chance, according to ESPN, the same as every other Big 12 team, less than 1% chance of qualifying for the college football playoff. And Oklahoma, I think, was at around 30% or something like that. They are in the Vegas. Doesn't Vegas have Oklahoma currently as a 2-touchdown favorite over Texas?
That was like, that one crazy line that had LSU like 8-point favorites too or something.
Regardless, the nation as a whole is looking at Texas and their 8 returning starters, and they are dismissing this Texas team, whereas I personally look at this Texas team – the way it's constructed, where its talent is, I think over the next 2 years, they have a window. I don't know how to necessarily view Texas in 2021 yet or 2022, but in 2019 and 2020, this is going to be a mega talented team with one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And I don't know that on the back end, there's another team in the country I would pick over what Texas is developing in the back end. I'll just go ahead and buy stock in that group. And I know at the very least Stearns, Green, and Foster are going to be NFL players. I think we think the other guys have a chance too. That's a secondary full of NFL players. It's just about kind of finding it and putting it all together and turning into those types of players all at the same time. I think this Texas team is as poised to as well to compete for a Big 12 championship as Oklahoma. I mean, I just, those two teams were close this season. Oklahoma lost as much as Texas did from a year ago. They're having to build their entire offensive line. I mean, I know Lincoln Riley and Jalen Hurts will almost have a, certainly have a sensational season, but whereas I feel like the nation is looking at Texas and feels like maybe it's a year away, I really come out of the spring thinking this team has every chance for the next two seasons to compete at a really, really high level and for really, really big honors. And if they don't, it's an absolute disappointment. Like, if they come away in each of the next two seasons without a championship title of some variety next to their names, it will have been a disappointment, because I think this team is poised to do something like that.
Well, when you look at eight returning starters, especially for people from a national perspective who don't really, you know, just dig deep into the roster, I mean, that's pretty alarming. You can kind of understand why some people are taking a wait and see approach. And some of those are like based off, aren't those numbers catch were based off of like their football power index or something like that, which is, I pay attention to that thing because I write about it in my column. That thing is always so skewed until about week seven of the football season. So I don't base a lot on those percentages right now about Texas having a 1% chance of making the playoffs. But anyways, you know, you look at eight returning starters and you're like, oh, wow, that's okay. Texas is probably going to, you know, maybe take a little bit of a step back. That's a lot of people to replace. But let's be honest, they're not replacing – not all, you know, it's not like they're replacing a bunch of high draft picks. And frankly, the guys that are coming in, though unproven, you can make a case that they might wind up being better players this year than the guys that they're replacing from last year. Most of them, I should say. So, you know, I understand why the numbers kind of look that way from a national perspective. And maybe people are sleeping on Texas a little bit. But those of us who follow the program daily, who know the roster in and out, you know, I think that's why we have certainly higher expectations maybe than you're seeing from some of these national projections.
My belief, Ketch, has always been that, at least I say always, it's not like since I was born, but over the last couple of years, I projected back when I was at 5 years old that in 2019, my belief has really been like Texas knocks on the door this year of maybe the Final Four, and then, you know, they break through the next year. But that being said, Ketch, if Texas goes and beats LSU in week two, I think the conversations that we're having are immensely different. I you know, we're talking about two top 10 teams, and then with that win against LSU, it almost gives them a little bit of a cushion. So if there is a letdown, let's say, you know, against another team early in the season, like obviously they can't do it late, but early in the season, still enough time to make up that whole thing. It could become a situation where that's what LSU became so important. They beat that team. And our Sundays are different. Like our Sundays, Catcher, or you're back in the old days when you're waiting for the polls to come out and you're waiting to see where Texas is ranked. And then, you know, you wait till later in the season and then you want to see, you know, who's ranked in the CFP and how that whole thing is shaping up. So, I'm with you, Catch. I won't be a person that just hands it over to Oklahoma and just says, well, this is Oklahoma's title to lose. You know, this is still a Texas team for, you know, that being said, that still over the last two years have beat SEC teams in bowl games. They beat a Georgia team that everyone expected, or at least thought that should have been at least in the CFP, and even say everyone, a lot of people thought. We know that what Tom Herman can do in big games. We know what Tom Herman can do when he's the underdog. So, I'm with you. Like, I think any discussion that doesn't include Texas, not only in the Big 12 championship game, but as a potential Final Four team is really, you know, short-sighted and not really looking at a holistic picture.
Guys, we got to go into parting shots because we do have a deadline. I'm going to go to those that requested the early deadline first and foremost so they can get out and do things that they need to do. Alex, Tell me you've got a rant.
No, Alex. He had to bolt to get to a commitment.
I tried to set him up. It's not a podcast without an Alex rant.
It's pretty bad. We should just delete this right now.
People will be so disappointed.
Well, Anwar, let's get you in then, because you had a deadline as well, and you were already on a roll. So what do you got for us for a parting shot?
Man, it really, quite honest with you, I'm thrown off because there's no Alex rant. So now I'm like, oh man, what do I do? It's basically, you know what it's like? It's like going to like a Broadway play and the person that you thought was going to be performing is not there.
You got the fill-in.
You got the fill-in people like, oh my God.
Come see Forrest Gump with Tom Hanks, and then you end up getting like, you know, Tom Hanks Jr. or something, and it's not the same thing.
From a Texas perspective, I would just say this is really interesting to me to see how, you know, I love this term living rent-free in someone's head. It's really interesting to see how Brian Carrington lives rent-free in so many people's heads, those of like Oklahoma fans and A&M fans. Like, it's fascinating to see how essentially one person, the director of recruiting, is the one person that everyone goes after. And it was really interesting to see that someone posted his resume. I think it was like an OU fan. And then it made its way to our board of all the places that he's worked, like an Olive Garden and all these other places. And it was kind of like supposed to be like disparaging. And what my comment was to that was, well, if posting his resume is supposed to be embarrassing, what does it say that the guy who was handing out breadsticks just a few years ago was kicking OU's ass in recruiting? Like, I don't really necessarily get the whole thing because we all come from somewhere, but watching how he lives rent-free in their heads is a pretty fascinating thing. Second thing is my wife brought home a dog, unbeknownst to me, a couple of weeks ago. And... And you know, I'm glad she went down the death row to rescue one. That's really cool. But, you know, this dog is like 12 years old. And I'm like, what time span do we even have with this damn dog?
Wife saved a 12-year-old?
She saved a 12-year-old dog.
So you got like less than a year with this dog.
Yes. I'm like, wait. So we got
and a lot of medical bills, probably.
Yes.
I'm like, and tears and like just hard feelings.
Everything. And I'm just like, could we have had a conversation about this? Could we have just had a kind of talked about it? It was just all I got was like a text message, and she had a dog in the car with a picture. And I'm like, is this dog coming to our house? Yep, I adopted it. I'm like,
Anwar, when a boat goes down, who are the first, like, is going to sink in the ocean? Like the Titanic. Yeah. When the Titanic sank, who were the first people that got on the lifeboats?
Oh, it was the women and the children.
Not the old ass dudes.
No. And so we got this old ass, I don't even know, this mutt.
Mutt. That mutt maybe been waiting 12 years for a family as good as yours. And give that dog as much love as you can in like the next 5 minutes while he's alive.
It's so bad. I don't know. I'm just a passenger seat in this whole relationship. I'm just in the passenger seat. I don't know what the hell's going on. I have other things I can rant about. I'm just going to pass the mic on.
Fair enough. Dustin, what about you? Anything? Do you really want to go into baseball? Like, not just baseball. Like, you could absolutely do anything baseball related you want. Do you have it in your heart to do Texas baseball today, or do you want to do something else?
Nah, let's see what they look like over the weekend. It's a big moment for them this season. They've got to figure out if they're going to be good or if they're just going to limp into the NCAA tournament.
Can I sneak in a question? A baseball question?
As long as it's not about the Red Sox.
It's not about the Red Sox.
Okay, go ahead.
Damn it, that was going to be my part in the shot, Dustin.
Well, I wasn't speaking for you, Jason. Like,
I'm going to slip it in there still. Go ahead.
What would Texas baseball need? I don't want to say that mentally I've given up on the Big 12 baseball championship. I mean, you know, that's not out of the question, I suppose. It could happen. But more as it relates to this team finding a way to host a regional, because I saw that question earlier this week from somebody, and I didn't see your answer because I may not have clicked back on that thread. What will this team need to do in this last month of the Big 12 season to put themselves into a position Will it be something that goes into the Big 12 tournament as well, that they'll need to do this and this? Because they've gone from a team that seemed like it was taken for granted, and that who knows, they might be able to be a seeded team, to, you know, they're not ranked in all the polls now, which would seem to indicate they've got work to do.
Yeah, they do have work to do. The positive thing for them is they've already played a really hard schedule, and they've still got some opportunities to pick up some really high quality RPI wins, beginning this weekend at Oklahoma State, who's 27th in RPI. So West Virginia's 13th in RPI. They're going to have a lot of opportunities to end the season to boost their resume even more, and it needs it because they dropped down to 37 in RPI. I think that they've got to finish in the top three, the Big 12, to have a chance to play their way into hosting regional by doing what they need to do in the Big 12 tournament. They're going to have one of the toughest strength of schedule ratings of anybody in the country. They've already got some good RPI wins. They could pick up some more RPI wins. By finishing top three in the league, it means that they probably won two of these upcoming series. If it's against West Virginia and Oklahoma State, two top 30 RPI teams, that could be a big boost to their resume. So it's the chances of definitely taking a big hit recently, especially with the home loss to Kansas State, who's just not good and not good in RPI. But they do still have a little bit of an opportunity if they can figure things out and finish the way, like they finished the season the way they did last year. I mean, it was around this point in time where they really started to click and figure things out. Unfortunately for them, there's no Cody Clemens on this team to kind of carry it to the finish line and into the postseason. So I would say top three in the conference, because they are going to have some good RPI opportunities coming up. If they can do that, they keep that door open, and then with an opportunity in the Big 12 tournament to kind of win their way into the hosting mix again.
Jason, feel free to talk about Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I just love looking at the standings and seeing the Red Sox have the worst record in the American League. Just makes my day. Not that my Yankees are very good either, but I take as much pride in their.
The sad thing is this season, they haven't even scored as many runs as they scored in that playoff game last year in Yankee Stadium. What'd they have, like 19 runs in that game?
That was last 19 year.
19 to 1.
Talking about last year. We're talking about their
I don't even think they've scored that many runs this year.
Well, when was the last time the Yankees won a world championship?
It's been a while.
Has been a while.
Is it that 2009?
Hey, we're talking about this year. This is my parting shot. You two shut up.
No, is it the 2009 team?
You know,
took out my Phillies?
Years, so yeah, that sounds about right. It's been that long. I don't know.
You tell me. You're the Yankees fan. I
blame A-Rod. The curse of A-Rod.
Philly baseball this decade. My Phillies, it's just not been good.
Hey, your Phillies are playing well, though. First place.
Yeah, but it's almost, I'm just now awakening up. That's why I'm asking questions.
Yeah, which is right. It was 2009. Curse of A-Rod. They're never going to win another one.
The curse of A-Rod for the Bambino curse. Yeah. that I could actually see that happening. That's as much as I despised A-Rod. No, my parting shot. Big recruiting weekend last weekend for Texas. I'll have more in the war room tonight. But just overall, just a tremendous success. Everybody I've talked to that came in really seemed to enjoy the weekend. Bijan Robinson, the running back, I talked to his. Rivals 100 running back. I talked to his coach yesterday, and sounds like it was just a tremendous visit. Look for him to be back and set up an official visit sometime. Chad Lindbergh, it sounds like Texas even further distanced itself from the pack with Chad Lindbergh. And, you know, just I could go on and on, but every player that came through had a good visit. Now, coming up in about 3 weekends or 2.5 weeks, I guess, Texas will host its big official visit weekend, its first big official visit weekend, May 3rd. Chad Lindbergh will be one of the guys that will be in town for that. So a lot of recruiting stuff, but my big parting shot is last night I went to a concert with my wife, this guy named Quinn 92. Probably nobody's ever heard of him. I'd never heard of him. My wife found him on YouTube, whatever. We go down to Stubbs and literally probably 1,500 people there. I'm pretty sure me and maybe one other guy were the oldest people there. It was all like college students, which didn't bother me a bit. Hey, whatever. But we were walking up and
Checking out the chicks?
Well, that's exactly where I'm going. Catch the lack of clothing that these college girls wear. Even my wife's like, man, those girls need to put on more clothes. I'm like, no, they don't. But I've never seen more ass cheeks hanging out of shorts and girls wearing swimsuits to concerts. I'm like, what in the world? I mean, it was pretty awesome on one hand, but then on the other hand, I'm like, I pray that my three daughters, they're very modest now, but they're very young. I pray that they never dress like that. But man, it's a different world going to a college type concert. Certainly from when I was in college, last time I was at Stubbs for a concert was when I was in college 20 plus years ago. But yeah, Ketch, you nailed it on the head, man. The chicks and I was texting my buddy. I was like, the lack of abundance of clothing was pretty eye-catching and pretty incredible. Bottom line is we need to start going to more concerts down at Stubbs, guys, because it was a hell of a lot of fun and a good show to boot.
Did your wife just give you a pass? Like, Kristen, when it's that flagrant and there's just women everywhere in bikinis?
Nah, believe me, Kristen does. She is not the type who cares. She's the type who would elbow me. Man, check out that chick's boobs or check out that chick's butt hanging out. So, no, she's pretty cool about that.
Would my wife. I think that's why we're happily married. And all of us, you and I, were both happily married and never divorced, in part because our wives, you know.
They know we're dirty old man. Come on,
They just embrace it. They just embrace it. Why try to, you know, tame the dragon? Just let the dragon fly. My final parting shot is this thing between LSU and A&M today is absolutely fascinating because one of the things, because A&M doesn't have championships that they can feel good about, so they end up championing things that aren't championships. So, you know, Jimbo Fisher is their coach, and that's almost as good as a championship. And, you know, now they've got a new basketball coach, and, you know, the thought of winning championships is second to almost winning championships. And when you've never almost won a championship, then hiring somebody who might be able to win you a championship is like the best elation that you can have. And so in hiring, admittedly, two really good coaches in both football and men's basketball over the course of the last couple of seasons, A&M has taken a special, I don't know, amount of affection towards its athletic director, Scott Woodward, that they believed, and even as of a couple of weeks ago, Billy Lucci was tweeting on Twitter that he'd rather have an athletic director who was a badass at making hires and kicking ass at his job than one that would, you know, be making smart-ass tweets on social media. And it seemed clearly like a thinly veiled shot at Mr. Chris Del Conte. Well, today, the beloved athletic director has left Texas A&M and gone to LSU in what, I don't care what A&M fans say, has to be one of the biggest kick in the nuts that they've probably felt in the last few, well, they're used to it. But I do wonder if today LSU has officially become Texas A&M's rival. I wonder if today, whereas Texas has Oklahoma, Texas A&M hadn't really had that. I mean, they play LSU at the time of the year every year where it's supposed to be a rivalry game. And, you know, it's, I think those two teams don't like each other. And I think that for recruiting purposes, it's always a big one. And, you know, there have been like slivers of reasons to believe why Texas A&M and LSU might be becoming staunch rivals of each other. I wonder if today that hasn't officially become the truth, that now, as of today, Texas and Oklahoma are definitely their number one rivals. There used to be some thought about where A&M fit on in the totem pole with Texas. Was it 1A? Was it 1B? They're not that anymore. It's definitely Oklahoma, but it's always still been Texas for Texas A&M. And I wonder today if that hasn't changed enough to the point where A&M fans aren't a little bit more obsessed with LSU moving forward than Texas. Probably not. Like, I don't know that you can. What do you think, guys? Like, what do you guys think this does? I know it's just a couple of us left. That's a pretty hardcore deal, isn't it? Like, to
lose. It is, but no way is LSU surpassing Texas. Now, man, Texas is so deeply embedded in A&M fans' minds.
I know you're right, but isn't that depressing?
Depressing for them, yes.
Like, imagine if some dude took your wife, and at the end of it, you were like, well, look, man, I might still, you're right. I have no reason to like the guy that just took my wife away from me, but there was someone who took my girl in the 12th grade and I'm never getting over that. Like, it's just, it's a weird one, man. Like, they live a weird reality where they hate Texas so much that LSU literally just took their favorite person. And you know, you're right. Texas will still probably be the number one. Dustin, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm like Jason. It's there's just such a weird obsession that it is rooted so deeply, and I think it all goes back to whatever the hell happens at that damn fish camp they do. Everybody comes back different from that thing. But just wait until Ed Orgeron struggles a little bit, because guess what's going to happen? The rumors are going to get going about Jimbo Fisher going back home with this athletic director. So just you wait. If it's not, if it's low right now.
What if Texas beats Coach O?
Yeah.
In the first game.
Oh, A&M fans are going to be the biggest Coach O fans that day. They are going to be beating their chest and challenging people to fights and doing all the, you know, hold the tiger, whatever it is. Yeah.
Fans of Red Bull. Everybody.
Yeah, it's they're gonna be pulling for Coach O that day, because I tell you what, it's as soon as he struggles, because I know who Jimbo Fisher's agent is, I know where he wanted to coach, and I know that he's really tight with his athletic director. So just give it a little time. It's not anything now, but it might turn into a little something.
That's funny. And on that note, everybody have a great Easter. I hope, whether you celebrate Easter or not, hey, use the time this weekend to be around your loved ones, and everybody be good to each other. Not enough of that going around in the world these days. So let's be nice to our Orange Bloods brothers, our non-Orange Bloods brothers, even Aggies and Sooners. If you see them out there, treat them halfway decent. You know, it's the humane and human, good human thing to do. That was my social justice warrior note of the day. Until next week, thanks for listening, guys, and thanks to Ticket City for being our sponsor. As Ryan Paraly would say back in the day, holla.